Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and this evening we will be dealing with the economic benefit of self-sustaining agriculture. And I'll have our special guest here with us this evening, Brother Sundiata Amich L. Diallo Sakur, and hopefully Abundance Child will join us on this broadcast this evening. Now, we're going to be dealing with what is the main financial benefit of self-agriculture. What is the current status of today's beneficial market? How can we profit on our own land? What percentage of the market is available today? How does other products we own and manufacture fit in? What is the equity side of this project? Okay? So now, let's take a look at the title alone. When we say self-sustaining agriculture, that means the produce, fruits and vegetables and stuff that we produce with our own hands as a source of being able to feed our own self and being able to use that as a marketable item as well. So we're going to get down into this and look at this thing from every conceivable angle and see what we can do about it. Before we open up the lines and get our guests in, the first thing I want to say, I'm offering the free articles as usual. 14th Amendment is exposed to commerce game, how to play, Secrets of America. And the way you get these documents, just contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Or you can contact me by email at tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that right to you. Just say, Tahaka, give me the free articles, and I'll send them right straight on to you. Also, we're going to have our new Moorish Summit coming up again in January. So make sure you mark that on your calendar and make sure that you're able to get down here so that we can all have a good time and get on down to the business. Keep in mind, for those of you who want to register with your government, go to www.moorishamericangov.org. That's www.moorishamericangov.org. If you want to contact me directly, call me at 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m., and I'd be more than happy to help you. For those of you who have a problem with your mortgage, if you got a problem with student loan debt, if you got a problem with the Internal Revenue Service, credit card companies, banks, or what have you, the police department, people writing your ticket, they're trying to send you to jail or whatever, give me a call or go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com and examine that page and click on the link to hawkerarchives.org and go there and check out what's available to you for aid, okay? So hold your hat just a second.
I want to talk to you about being on a merry-go-round. You know, a merry-go-round will go round and round and round and round, and if it doesn't stop, you will remain in the same position, but in order to get off that merry-go-round, you're going to have to put in some effort. And this is pretty much what happens to us on a regular basis. We get up in the morning, shower, shave, get a little bite to eat, make a beeline to work. We get a lunch break, coffee break, another lunch break, and then at the end of the day, we go home. We do this for 360 days a year, and at the end of the year, we're looking for something different to happen financially, but we don't realize that we're in the same position that we were in the year before because we keep doing the same thing. The definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing over and over, looking for a different result, and of course, no different result is going to happen unless you put forth some effort to get off the merry-go-round. Now, one of the major solutions to the problem is to look at your current situation. If you have a mortgage, if you got credit card debt, if you got student loan, if you got a problem with the Internal Revenue Service, if you would cancel these contracts, if you have a mortgage gives you if you're paying $800-$900 a month on a mortgage, if you cancel that, that's $900 a month in your pocket. If you have a student loan, you're paying $500-$600 a month on that, that's $500-$600 a month in your pocket. If you Internal Revenue Service asks you for $10,000 that you owe them, you cancel that contract, that's $10,000 that you don't give them. It's very, very simple math, but if we don't make any effort to get off the merry-go-round, we remain in the same position. I would like to recommend you to go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and the package is available there now for you to cancel those contracts.
Okay, Moore, we back. I see that my guests have arrived, so I'm going to go ahead and open up these lines so we get head on and make some heads and tails of this thing. Area code 706, ending in 9808. Tell us who you are, where you calling from, what's your question or comments?
Dalo Sekou. What's going on, brother?
Welcome, my brother. Welcome, my brother. Hold on. Let me get this other line open up here. Erico 561. Let us have it.
Islam, peace. This is Brother Sundi Ada El. Peace
okay.
To the family. How's everybody doing?
All right. Peace. Peace and love, brother. Peace and love. Brothers, I certainly appreciate you all coming on, and really enjoyed my time I spent with you all in that summit that we had down here. That was fantastic, man. And but what we want to do now is we want to look at and answer some questions, get some things out, and satisfy the curiosity of a lot of the people that's here today. There's a lot of them that say they was coming, so I see the switchboard lighting up. And I want to start with my brother Diallo. Because he's banging the pavement down here on this east side farm. Brother, here's my question to you, Brother Diallo. First of all, before we even get started with any questions, could you tell us how the audience can get a hold of you and what's going on with you and what's the latest?
Yes, sir. The easiest way to get a hold of me, if you go to summitofthemoors.com and just go to contact and email. Simply email me, it'll be easier. You know, with everyone's schedule to allow me to be able to respond accordingly to the email.
Okay.
That's it.
Now, let me ask you something. Now, we videoed the summit. Did we do that? The last
it
summit?
Was bits and pieces of the first one was recorded by the brother from NBTV.
Right.
And
right.
This time it was more just everyone just kind of free falled and did their own recordings.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Here's my question. I want to look at what is the equity side of what you guys are specializing in. How do you view that?
Well. First, people have to understand, you know, how equity is defined. Equity is defined as substantive. That's something real. In comparison to other things, that's the opposite of equity, which would be something like law, which is the fictitious entity. But the equitable side the equitable side of farming or dealing with agriculture, controlling your food supply, changing your diet, changing your mentality, changing everything around you. Those are all equitable attributes that's taking place when you get into dealing with a collective group of people who have the same mentality as you, dealing with forming or farming and getting into therapeutic aspects of farming. All of these things change a person's mentality, or as I just like to say, a paradigm shift that takes a place, because it truly is a transformation when we decide to take on something that's always been there, always been there. We always supported it from the commercial side. So here's an opportunity that we could take to control it from the vertical ground up aspect and change the entire scope of an area in which we're in. So the equity side is very powerful. It is the most powerful aspect of agriculture and farming.
Okay. Brother Suniata, you want to add into that?
Brother Dallo kind of hit it on the point. It, you know, dealing with agriculture allows you to, you know, sort of start at ground zero. That's the basis of all things. So there's equity in that. Like you said, it's something substantive. It's real. It's something that you can actually hold on to and make it a part of your daily life. So you start from the ground, you know, literally you start from the ground and you grow from there. You know, it's like the foundation of all things. It's like when they say, boy, you need to ground yourself, or you need to put your feet down and ground yourself. You know, that is, you know, what agriculture is really all about. It's literally grounding yourself into the earth so that you can reap the rewards and the benefits of it. I agree with everything that our brother said, and it is the foundation. So we must start there in order to create the type of situation that we want to see for ourselves and our families and our children.
Let me add something real quick, Tahaka, about the brother Sundiata. Sundiata came in my life, I guess, at a point in time, you know, as a researcher, I deemed myself a researcher before a teacher. And I just tend to teach and then get to a point of applying what it is I've learned or what I talked about. And Sundiata came up with some great concepts, and he basically one who put me on the application of the agriculture. And so, you know, this is why he is the president of Urban Geoponics. And we will eventually launch, maybe next week we'll be launching the Urban Geoponics blog talk, so that we can galvanize the people. We won't just be putting out information. We're going to galvanize so we can get into the bigger plan, as you already know, of putting a farm in each state. So this is, the urban geoponic blog talk would be basically beyond the summit. People talk about, oh, I can't wait to the summit. Nah, we got work in the morning. We ain't waiting to Jay. We got work tomorrow right now. See, so
that's right.
You know, we're going to keep the energy going in the public through, through the free media, the blog talk, the Facebooks, the Urban Geoponic page, where people kind of post their pictures. And it's beautiful, man. It's beautiful.
Okay. All right. Well, Brother Suniata, give us a little background information on you and how they can get over there to us, because I know you got your little website and stuff. How can the people access to see what's going on over there with you?
Sure. Well, they can reach me via telephone through area code 850-778-1531-1531. They can reach me by email at compostcommunity9@gmail.com. That's compostcommunity9@gmail.com. And basically what I deal with primarily is food accessibility. You know, it goes beyond just growing food in terms of like the production side. You know, it's okay to be able to grow a little bit of food in your front yard for yourself or in your backyard. But when you can step it up a notch and you can actually grow enough to share with neighbors, you know, you've just increased the accessibility of food for the next person, for somebody else, at least one other person. So that has to be the mentality. And so that's what I focus on, is food accessibility for people in general, for all people. So that's a little bit about what I do and what I focus on. So it's about food sovereignty, you know, being in control of your food supply from the top all the way to the bottom, from the production side all the way to the consumption side, and everything in between, all of the links in that chain where the product is made, and, you know, to the point where it ends up on the shelf or at the farmer's market. We want to be in control of that. So those are some of the things that I primarily focus on. I have somewhat of a background in agriculture, but only from a personal standpoint, in terms of, like, you know, I watched my father grow food in the back. I watched my father. He and my uncle had a worm farm, a red wiggler worm farm, you know, back in the late 70s. And, you know, so I remember those things, but, you know, going through life, adolescence, young adulthood, early adulthood, you begin to move away from those things in search of your own identity. But it's amazing how you end up coming right back around to that which you saw and grew up around as a child. So I'm here it is. I'm walking in my father's footsteps when it comes to being an educator, when it comes to being into agriculture and horticulture and worm production and, you know, compost production. So that's a little bit about me and my background in agriculture and what I'm looking to create, you know, through my efforts, especially through urban geoponics and this Moorish movement in terms of agriculture.
Yes, and I too have a background in agriculture. I go to Winn-Dixie and buy my grapes. And
I'm having a hard time hearing, brother. It's kind of in and out. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what'd you say about them grapes in Winn-Dixie?
No, I'm just joking. I'm just messing around. I have no background in agriculture, man. I'm kind of self-made, like with everybody else around here.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how did you come about? Because I noticed I'd seen you was traveling across the country and you were teaching and doing your things. But then, what sparked you to come up with this idea to do the Eastside Farm, and you know, how did that come about? Because I never did figure out how you came to that point.
It's a culmination of things. One is, when I was out lecturing, I saw that the people were kind of, you know, they pigeonholed you. The people that was bringing you out to the city or the state, they would pigeonhole you in a certain amount of information. And I was never the one to be talking about the same thing. Taj or Sabir Bey or, you know, somebody else was talking, and I've done lectures with all of them, was talking about. My thing is about being in addition to information and empowerment. And so I didn't want to be, you know, when I teach, I believe in teaching so that you fully understand what it is I'm bringing, and hopefully that it will show a way to change your thought process in living in this world that we're living in. So I was just like, yo, this is – I tried to introduce a collective money thing years ago on this video called the $2 bill, where I explained that that's not a more on the back of the $2 bill, and people need to just stop putting out BS information and hear the facts. But people just kind of like, whatever. What about the flag? You know what I mean? Hey, you know, if we did this in each state, we could do this and we could – yeah, that's great. But is it a 5-pointed star on the flag or a 6-pointed star? All right, so this – what I did was I just basically said I was simply in teaching out in public until I came up or found or joined a viable, strong solution for our economics. Because no one was talking about economics. If they were, they were talking about buying their products. And some of them were selling other people's products and ideas and still do, and then push it hard as if they manufactured it. Well, to me, that's not being in control. That's not a boss. A boss creates his own, brings his people forward to be partners, and sells it to the world. See, with this, everyone is an owner. No one is under. Everybody's an equal partner in everything that we're doing. If I go out, mm-hmm. or one of us go out and do it first, we're doing it first until you guys, until the other people decide, okay, we can come on, you know, we'll go out and test the ground first, and they'll be like, boom. For example, I want to lock down a house in Detroit. Tomorrow, I'll lock down two more. And so now the people who know will get the phone calls and the emails, all right, here's the date that we got to close the deal on these properties. So now, boom, what we want to do. So to me, and I wasn't even just trying to make a statement. I was just reading, going through years ago, I was reading, I think it was, it's like a Drew Ali book, no, a more Science Temple book that has Drew Ali information. It's not like the Quran. It's a different type of book. And he's like, our greatest plight. He said our greatest plight is economic security. Now, remember, the year that he started the temple, remember the year the Great Depression hit.
Right.
Okay. So, remember, this man had multiple businesses and merchandise. So he had multiple streams of income coming in, and he had a built-in following who also would go out and propagate and sell his other products as well. So what I'm saying is he didn't say the other things was our greatest plight that a lot of the Moors are doing. He said economics was. And you know that if he said he's an Egyptian, that he was very familiar with African principles. The African principles are always about
right.
collecting. It's not about being the most powerful man in America. It's about the most powerful group in America. That's more powerful. It's more powerful to have, the 50 members of the Moore's Equity Group on the cover of Enterprise, and they're talking about the humanitarian efforts that they've been doing in the country and abroad. You understand? These are not even long term. This is like what's taking place. So the agriculture piece, you know, we always looking to change and adapt and make our body stronger to live longer and comfortable for ourselves, for our children, our grandchildren, the whole nine. And so it's just like if the grocery stores were closed tomorrow, how will we live? When Katrina hit, that's when I started getting into making sure I had the family always had a bag with food, money, and clothing in it. So if we had to run, we grabbed that bag, boom, we out of there. We can go for 7 days. You know, in these bags, the tents, we could do that. And so then the other thing would be like, well, we don't control on anything. The grocery store is closed, we probably starve. The brother would always talk about how we don't even make toilet tissue or shoestring. So we have to get into the business aspect. Even getting into the business aspect, it strengthens our culture. It strengthens the economy where we're at, no matter if you want to be in that country or not, because you're providing jobs, your corporation is paying taxes, everybody's eating because you have provided a way. And so we can provide the way when we're doing it as a group and not just, you know, somebody selling a product. And we also strengthen the houses, the families, the mentalities because we provide partnerships and ownerships and people's diets will change. It's an entire paradigm shift that's taking place with what we're doing. So the agriculture piece represents the first form of transformation in the area. Why transformation? Because the first deity of agriculture is Asar or Osiris. He's green. Green represents transformation. So we look at that area. We want to look at those houses. We want to be the majority stakeholder in that street, on that street, in that community, on that commercial side, that's the commercial venues. We want that. We want to be 5-10 deep owners in that property. So now we can brag about the drug-free, the crime-free, the highest form of education in that city. These are businesses that we've started, that we've done from the ground up. We take our fruit, our vegetables, our moringa trees, our guamana, our medicinal herbs. We take them out of the ground, bottle them up, put them on our shelves, and also make it viable for other people who want to distribute them, or we just basically wholesale them out. Now we're controlling what Dr. Claude Anderson said, vertically, from the ground up, literally. And that's just that. We haven't gotten into technology. We haven't gotten to alternative fuels. We haven't gotten into building clinics. We haven't talked about credit unions. So when the people get into the business of doing the business, they are uplifting humanity. Education, we stand on the shoulders of those who teach. We're the ones who are about the execution of all the talking. You understand? So it's a shout-out to all those brothers who talk and teach and the sisters as well. But at some point in time, we have to apply what it is that we've been talking about for so long.
Okay. Amen. That's fantastic. Well, let me ask you this. Now, we know about the side that everybody gets a chance to eat. But what about the financial side? What is the impact, financial impact, in your opinion?
That was for me, Taco, or Sundiata?
Yeah.
The financial impact of growing the farms? Let's look at it like this. You know, our conversation, we have to, if the people who are listening are not business savvy, we have to start beginning to become business savvy, because our mentality is, when we don't understand it, we think it's the enemy. It's evil. It's wicked. You know, the court system is a terrible thing, but if you know how to operate or navigate in it, it only can do what you tell it to do. Same thing about business, same thing about banking. If you know what you're doing, if you don't know all the rules of engagement, you're a victim of it. That's why we buy everything and don't own anything. So you take a company, you take a Moore's Equity Group that has 50 farms in it, that group has a lot of assets, liquidable assets. Number one, it has land. And number two, that land will always yield year after year after year after year. Do you understand? As long as you cultivate it, it's doing more. Land is doing, the farms are doing more than what your gold and silver can do in a lifetime. You see what I'm saying?
That,
you can't take your silver coin. I can take my little black pot versus your silver dollar, and we sit it down for the next 20 years and see what happens. Which one goes
well,
up, goes down.
Will
and
still be sitting there. With you. It ain't
right.
Going nowhere. It ain't going to do nothing. It'll just be sitting there. Your stuff will be growing and harvesting and replanting and all kind of stuff be going on. Yeah.
Doctor,
your
phone is going in and out.
My phone is going in and out. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. It's just like a long period. We couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, it keeps going out. It's been doing that from the beginning.
All right, hold on one second. Y'all hold on a second. Let's take a little quick break. Let me take a look at this thing, and we'll be right back. Okay, hold on.
Okay, we back. Can y'all hear me now, Moose? Can you hear me now?
Yeah. We hear you.
Okay. Okay, good, good, good. My next thing I want to ask, Brother Suniata, when you were at the summit here in Jacksonville, you put up a, you made the front page of the newspaper in your town. Could you give us the breakdown on that? How that came about? What happened?
Okay. Well, what happened was there was a young lady who was actually a journalism student at the University of Florida, and she's from Tallahassee. So when she was up here for the summer, working as an intern for the local newspaper. It's called the Tallahassee Democrat. And so she was doing a couple of different articles on different folks in the food movement, in the areas of sustainability. And she had heard about me, and then she, you know, looked me up and looked up the business, and she found the website. And then she basically just reached out to me, and we set up a time to you know, get together to discuss what it is that I do, what the business actually entails, the impact and the difference that I'm making in regards to composting. And basically, you know, she did a nice little interview, asked a whole lot of pertinent questions in regards to what composting is and the benefits of it. And then about a week later, you know, it was in the paper. She published it front page, local section. And you could actually go on the website, tallahassee.com, and look in their archives to about a good month ago. And you'll see the video that she did on me, and it was a good piece, you know. So it basically came about like that. And that's the beautiful thing about the food movement. Because it is the hottest movement in the country and in the world right now. And you're going to have people who jump in it and become a part of it, and are going to stay in it and going to make it their life, because they end up seeing that it is their life, and they take every moment and every ounce of energy to make sure that they're learning and studying and researching to make it a part of who they are, to make it a part of their very essence and existence. So you're going to have people that jump in, and you're going to have people that jump out. You're going to have people that jump in, and you're going to have people that stay in it. So she was reaching for different story ideas, reaching for different people who are involved in the food movement. And like I was saying, the beautiful thing about the food movement is that once you put your name out there in terms of who you are and what you do, everybody in the food movement, you know, will end up knowing who you are, so that they can refer you and they can suggest you to this person or to that person, or, oh, yeah, I know what he does. He works with young folks on the South Side. You need to get in touch with Suniata. Oh, he does composting. You need to get in touch with him because he can talk about composting. He can come to your school, or he can come to your college campus and talk about, you know, composting and the importance of it. Or, you know, our hotel is a green certified hotel. We need to get a composting aspect or a composting component to what we do, being a green certified hotel. So let's get this guy from compost community to come in. So, you know, that's essentially how it happened. And you know, so the name gets out there, and your business name and what it is that you do. And, you know, people seek you out. They seek you out, and they want to know more about you. They want to do stories on you. They want to highlight you. So I've kind of entered into that phase of what it is that I do, where people are seeking me out in terms of the business aspect, and they want to create a story. They want to write a story or tell my story in regards to the composting aspect. And then it's all tied in. The composting is just tied into agriculture. So it's just, you know, it's just a part of everything that's going on. It's a part of the movement. So that's essentially how this young lady sought me out, and I ended up in the local section of the local newspaper here. I'm very grateful for the story that she did.
You say we can go to, is that Tallahassee.com, www.tallahassee.com, and actually see that article?
Yeah, yeah, you can do an archive and go back to, I believe it was like at the very beginning of August when it aired. So you can look in the archives in their video section. Well, go to local, and you'll be able to scroll down, and you should be able to find that video there where you can view it. So, yes, Tallahassee.com.
Okay, now here's my next question.
Yes.
Give us a breakdown on exactly what composting is, what it consists of, what is that, and what's the benefits of that? What is that about?
Well, composting is it's the natural organic decomposition process of anything that's alive, any organic matter. So, you know, I mean, when you see and anything that's alive can be composted or does go through a composting process after the life force is gone from that particular entity. So, you know, animals die on the floor of the forest. They compost right and they decompose right back into the natural environment. Leaves during the fall seasons and even in tropical areas where you don't necessarily get a fall or a winter, but, you know, all living things have their seasons and their cycles. So when those things hit the ground, they just began a decomposition process, and all of those nutrients from that leaf, that fruit, whatever the case may be, goes right back into the earth. So the composting process from a agricultural perspective is just one of mimicking nature. So what we do is we take certain components. We take those organic components, such as fruit scraps, veggie scraps. A lot of people use manure from animals, chicken manure, horse manure, cow manure, rabbit manure, even worm manure, earthworm manure, or red wriggler worm manure. And you allow these things to sit in one spot for a certain amount of time, and over that time period, the microbial life begins to go in and eat away at those organic items. And when they eat at it, they produce this heat, and that heat then generates, that's being generated, will kill off any disease or anything that might be harmful to an individual or to the growing of food through that decomposition process. It's the heat that eliminates anything harmful, any harmful bacteria that's in the food or in the manure. So it's not like you take horse manure or rabbit manure and you just immediately throw it on your crops. You got to let it sit for a certain amount of time so that it can decompose and break down, heat up, and then it'll be ready to use after a certain period of time, anywhere from like 6 to 9 to 12 to 18 months, depending on the type of attention and energy you give it. So basically, the type of composting that I deal with primarily is fruit and veggie scraps, which are your nitrogen sources, and dead leaves or wood chips, which are your carbon sources. So you have to have a ratio of about 25 or 35 to 1. And the 25 or 35 is the carbon-based material, and the 1 is your nitrogen-based material. So when those are your two primary elements, and of course, all of those things, especially the food, have all of those other elements in it that we need, that our bodies need for the food as well. Iron, magnesium, manganese, calcium, all of these different elements. But it's the carbon and the nitrogen are the two main ingredients that go into the creation of quality compost. So essentially that's what compost is. It's the natural organic decomposition process and procedure of organic material, and over time it transforms into what we call compost, and it looks just like dirt. It looks just like soil, and then you can actually use that to go and grow your food. So it's a recycling process that you want to eventually participate in, and either start it in your own home, start it if you belong to a community garden, or if you own a farm. You want to have a composting operation so that you don't have to import or purchase compost that you use to grow your food with. You could just have your own self-sustaining composting operation that you'll draw from to grow your food. And that goes back to one of your earlier questions about self-sustainability. And composting is one of those components of self-sustainability. So that's a little minor breakdown on what it is.
Okay. Let me ask Brother Diallo a question. Brother Diallo. Diallo, you with me, brother?
Hey, Tarka, real quick, before the brother comes back on, let me say something real quick in regard to the financial impact of food. Just to add on, just to kind of camp back on to what Brother Diallo said. One of the financial impacts is the ability to create that vertical stream of enterprise. So hold on, son, I'm on the phone. So when you create that vertical stream of enterprise, you're creating multiple businesses from the growing of food. So what I mean by that is that one aspect of being able to make money is the ability to grow the food. And then when you grow the food, you can then create what you call value-added products. And these are some of the topics I touched on at the summit. You can create products that come out of food. So basically you're processing the food. So when we go to the store and we buy food in a box, you know, that's a processed item that someone has taken food and has, you know, shifted and manipulated it into a processed item, and now you can create another source of revenue from that item. So we create these value-added products. So, you know, you think about bread. You know, when you want bread, you just go to the store and you see it all nice and pretty, a nice loaf chopped up into multiple pieces and your slices, and it's packaged pretty. But when you start thinking about how did that bread end up on the grocery store shelf in that package? And there are multiple links in that chain from the farmer who grew that wheat or that whatever grain that bread is made out of, all the way to the final product of it being on the store shelf. So you have all of those links to that process that we can now begin to immerse ourselves in and eventually take control of certain aspects of it and certain industries through the creation of those value-added products, through the creation of the multiple business links that allow from a product to go from inception all the way to its final product on the store or on the farmer's market stand. So you need somebody to grow the wheat, right? You need somebody to grow that grain. You need somebody to process that grain. You need somebody to chafe it, to separate, you know, the wheat berry. You can harvest wheat berries from your wheat. You can harvest the flour. You know, you can create the flour that you make from the wheat. And then you take that flour, and that goes to another company. And then that company begins to process that flour and add all of those other additives to it to create that final loaf, you know, that you get in the grocery store. Then there's the packaging aspect of it, you know, the plastic or whatever, or the paper that's used to house that bread. So it's so many different aspects of finance that we can begin to get into when you grow food. You know, you take okra. You can grow tons of okra, sell off a lot of the okra that people want to eat, but then you can take a certain percentage of that okra, bake it, throw some sea salt on it, package that up, and now you have okra chips. You can do the same thing with string beans. You can do the same thing with kale. You can create kale chips. So there's a wide array of business aspects that can come out of just growing food. And then not only to mention, you know, the production part, but, again, the manufacturing part. And then we want to be able to jump into the game of distribution. So the whole chain from beginning to end to final product is what we want to begin to engage in and eventually take control of certain industries. So that's just another aspect of the financial impact of food and the ability to take control of your food systems.
Okay. Well, let's say I had a backyard just 50 by 50 foot. On an average, you techniques that you're talking about, and let's say that I had a couple of grocery stores inside the community, and I had places that I could take my fruits and vegetables to, using the techniques that you're talking about, how much money on average you think I could make?
If you have a 50 by 50 plot, I mean, well, it depends on the season, and it depends on what you're trying to grow. You know, are you trying, you know, certain farms, you know, one of the reasons why large-scale farmers are able to make some decent money is because they're sticking, they're into crop specialization. They'll just grow one or two crops. They'll just grow nothing but corn or nothing but wheat, you know, nothing but okra or nothing but okra and greens. So it depends on what you want to focus on. Now, if you, the more diverse your crop selection is, then the more energy and attention that you have to go in, that goes into the the maintenance and care of those crops. So basically, if you have a 50 by 50, and like let's just say you're going in, like we're going into the winter season now, and all you wanted to grow was like leafy greens. You could grow collard greens, chard, kale, green mustards, purple mustards. Just say you focused on those five products. Those are all leafy greens. They're all pretty durable, not a lot of disease and pest management that you would have to deal with in the wintertime. You know, you could easily make monies starting from about the end of September or the beginning of October into February, March, into April, depending on how cold it stays and how durable your crops remain over that time. You know, on a monthly basis, let's just say on a weekly basis, you could make, you know, you can make over a couple of $100 just from selling those crops, and then you multiply that times four for your month. So for your month, you could bring in 2, 4, 6. You know, you could bring in $1,000 in a month. You know, if you're doing it the right way, you know, if you're growing it right, you're using organic principles, you're taking care of it, maintaining it, really paying attention to it. That's the thing about agriculture. You got to pay attention to what you're doing. You can't slip up. You know, you can't let something sit on the stalk for too long, because it becomes too hard or it becomes too coarse and you don't want to use it at that point. So it's a science involved into growing food. So with that amount of space and with the number of crops that you can grow, you could bring in $1,000 on in a month, a good month. You could bring in $1,000. So, and then like I said, and that's all the way until April. You know, so that and so that's just that small amount of land. So imagine jumping, doubling up to 100 by 100, right? And then you're talking about acres. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 acres, 10 acres of growing, you know, a nice, you know, sometimes you can have a nice diverse group of crops, or you can just specialize in a few crops. So if you have that land and the knowledge and the know-how to be able to produce and maintain it and harvest when you're supposed to harvest, and not just that, but again, what Brother Dallow was talking about is the business side of it. You know, a lot of one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of farmers make, especially here down in my region, there's a sister county called Jefferson County. It's rural. One of the cities is called Monticello. Some folks might have heard of Monticello, but you got tons of farmers in Monticello, and a lot of their food just goes bad every year, all season, all year round. A lot of their food goes bad because they have not created a system for themselves to be able to get that food from their garden to the people, to the grocery stores, to the farmers' markets. So a lot of it is grown. I'm sorry?
Your phone break up. It broke up. All we can hear is a lot of their food goes. What did you say after that?
Oh, I was saying a lot of their food goes bad because they haven't created the avenues to get that food from their farm and to reach as many people as they possibly can outside of their rural area. Because, you know, you got a farm and you're in the rural segment of your county or city, you know, the majority of the people are not in the rural parts. They're in the city. So you got to be able to create a system, an efficient system, that allows you to get that food from the rural parts of your county to the people. And like I said, a lot of those farmers have been struggling in doing that because they have not created a system. So that's where people like us can come in and create that link. We can create that bridge. We can reach out to the rural farmers in your area and say, hey, I'm going to be that bridge between you and the people in the city, between you and the people in those farmers markets and in those grocery stores. And then that's another economic opportunity that we can create just from the growing of food, from you know, connecting the consumer to those producers, you know, via our ingenuity, via our genius to make sure that the food gets to the people, because that's what we're essentially about, eliminating food deserts and making sure that people take control of their food supply. So, a lot of money can be made. We just got to figure out, or we just have to plan it out. You know, anything, like any business, you need a business plan, and you got to sort it out. You got to map out your area, and you got to project long term what your gains may be versus what your losses may be, and plan accordingly. Because you're always at the whim of Mother Nature. You never know when you're going to get a rainy season, and those rains are just going to come one whole, or, you know, it's going to rain a week and destroy your corn crop, or just come and destroy your okra, or destroy whatever it is that's there. So you got to have a backup plan. And I think that's what's so beautiful about what we're doing, is that, you know, we are setting a system up where we're going to have multiple operations, multiple North East Side farms in multiple areas to prevent that type of hit, to prevent that type of loss. And not only have those North East Side farms set up in urban areas, but we're also going to have farms set up, specialty crop farms set up in rural areas. So that way, there'll always be somewhat of a backup financially, and there'll always be a backup through the food, making sure that we were getting the food to the people so that they're, you know, they don't skip a beat in terms of being fed. So we're not trying to have anybody go hungry. So, you know, that's the beauty of what we got going on. So I'll stop there for a moment. I'll take a breather.
All right, brother. Brother Diallo, what about
yes, sir,
soap and toothpaste and stuff like that, and the seeds from the fruits and vegetations that you grow? That's a market, a part of a marketable part of that as well, isn't it?
It is. It's very important that we keep the seeds from the things that we're eating. Everything that we eat and grow is all plants are self-sustaining. They all have seeds in them so they can regenerate. And what we do is we keep all of our seeds. Yesterday we harvested about maybe 4 pounds of basil and about 4 pounds of peppers. And we dehydrated most of those, that basil. And we're getting ready, we're jarring it up now for the public to be able to get. But we're creating seed banks, and this is why we created a Facebook page called Urban Geoponics, so that.
Hey, you know, say that again, bro. You cut off. Say that again.
We have a Facebook page called Urban Geoponics, and in there is just, you know, people that's into farming or gardening and share ideas and concepts. And in there, we ask people to save their seeds, and we can collectively create our own seed bank. One of the things I heard about, which I thought was a dope idea, is, you know, eventually we will go ahead and open up a bookstore / cafe or whatever. But whenever
okay.
you purchase or check out a book, you get a package of seeds free.
And your job and your duty is to plant those seeds. And once it's harvested, bring those seeds back to the bank.
Okay. Now, so, ladies and gentlemen, y'all hear that. Now, don't go in there and buy no boogies and get them seeds and you ain't going to plant them. So next time you come in there, we're going to be looking for it to find out what you're going to plant. Just kidding. Just kidding. But now, this I'm looking at another aspect of this, because I heard somebody mention something about soap and different other products that can be made from the fruits and vegetables that you're growing. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. Before I touch on that, also let me go off something Brother Dallo said in terms of the seeds. If y'all want to, you get online and Google seed bank in the Arctic or something like that. I forget exactly where it's located. But this company or this corporation has this huge underground seed bank stored away in like a glacier. And they've been working on this for quite some time. And basically, you know, they're doing just that. They are, you know, putting away and storing seeds because, you know, they know that something's going to happen in the near future in regards to these major agricultural companies, these commercial ag companies that are in the process of copyrighting seeds. So you got companies like Monsanto who put certain, you know, GMOs inside of certain fruits and veggies, and they have non-productive seeds. So even though the fruit itself will have seeds, when you put them in the ground, they won't grow. So that's the most important reason as to why we may need to make sure we're saving seeds grown from our organic produce so that we can have those seeds stored away for the future, keep them in a nice cool area, and so that we're just always prepared. We just always want to be prepared. Now, in terms of your question, Brother Parker, yes, absolutely. The herbs and the plants that we grow, you can create. Now, you said soaps, right? You said soap?
Yeah.
So, that's one of those value-added products that we can create from food. We can create soaps. You can create a soap bar that has rosemary in it, has basil in it, has thyme in it, has eucalyptus in it, has peppermint in it, has all kind of herbs in it. So those types of value-added products are just what we need in order to step up the economic game, to be able to create a whole new economic side or financial side for the process of growing the food. And in addition to that, like Brother Dallo said, they took the basil and they dehydrated it. Okay, so why are we going to dehydrate herbs? Well, you can dehydrate the herbs to create a tea. You can take those herbs and you can bag them up and you can create a basil tea. And I did that with basil that I grow here in my own home. That basil tea is like, it's healing, it's therapeutic, and it just has, you know, tons of properties that are there for the healing. So you can create teas, you can put it in a bottle and create your own spice, you know, crumble them up, and now you got your own basil in a bottle. You can do the same thing with thyme and sage. So, yeah, the various spinoff products or the value-added products that you can create from the growing of herbs and things of that nature is ideal. It's essential for our survival. And then some of the other avenues that we need to make sure that we get a lot of our sisters into are the ability to take those herbs and extract the essential oils from the herbs. Because if you've ever gone to a health food store and you want to buy an essential oil, you know, lemon balm essential oils or lemon peel or orange peel essential oils are expensive. There's a high demand for them, and there's a pretty high price tag attached to those things. So we want to make sure that our sisters are, putting themselves in that domestic capacity to create those essential oils for the healing of the children and for the healing of our families. So, yeah, there's just so many things that you could do with the herbs that we grow. Absolutely.
Now, I got a friend of mine up in Alaska, and he's been trying to get me to make contact with somebody in the United States to ship fresh fruits and vegetables there. They got a ton of fish, you know, going to bed. But he says they don't have any. Okay, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, after the show is over, I'll call you tonight or in the morning and give you the contact with this brother, because I had hooked him up with this one brother, and they, for some reason, you know, he told me that he had crop failure and he couldn't do what the brother wanted, but the brother said he'll take care of it. And now he's in Alaska, so you have to call him and leave your message and stuff, and eventually he will call you back. But I know he goes out to sea and stuff, and do a lot of fishing, and he come back and he sell the fish to the market. But he wants to set up a farmer's market. He wants to connections here in the United States that we can ship it to him, and we have a steady connection. Okay. Now, all right. Now, I want to look at something else here. Now, when it comes to the packaging aspect of this, and this is just what I got in my head. You know, I could be wrong. But it seems to me that what you guys are actually doing, you could create your own packaging from the fruits and vegetables you grow. Am I right or wrong? There's something else that we have to
do. You're right, brother. About. You're right. I mean, everything can be created, and that just goes back to what I was saying in terms of the links to that chain of the full business enterprise, the full the whole gamut of production all the way to consumption, to who it is that we're going to be selling it to, and to our own people also, is being able to package it up as well. That is one of those aspects. You know, you got to have your companies to come in and do the designs. You gotta have somebody do the design of the package, the colors, the labels, what type of materials you're going to be using. So everything can be used. I mean, everything, every aspect of that chain, every link, every business enterprise from beginning to end can be controlled by us if as we move forward through this process. Absolutely.
Okay, now here comes the big question. Can organic farming that we're discussing here tonight be the solution to feeding America?
It is the solution. It is the solution, and it's happening right now. We need more soldiers on the front lines when it comes to agriculture, to growing food. And we need people who are going to step up to the plate and actually be serious about learning, about educating themselves on not just how to grow it, but every aspect of growing, when to grow, when to plant. Do you plant when the moon is full? Do you plant? What days do you plant on? You know, that's even going back to Benjamin Banneker. And almanac, and using those, using the lunar cycle and the solar cycles to plant our food. We need people who are going to study those things. We already got tons of cosmologists and astrologists and people who read the stars, this, that, and the other, but they're trying to tell you about you. No, I need you to tell me, Mr. Star Man, Stargazer, I need you to tell me when's the best time for me to put my seeds in the ground so that I can reap the best harvest that I've ever seen. We need people who are going to study these things and be soldiers in the front line to make sure that they're learning the food game. And not just growing food, but the food system that we're a part of. I mentioned at the summit that the majority of the food systems throughout this country are controlled by Europeans and owned and financed. And new enterprises and new businesses that come out of the food movement are usually through European folks throughout the country. We need to take that, we need not take it over, so to speak, but we need to make sure that we immerse ourselves in the food systems in our cities and respective territories to make sure that we are gaining control of our food. Because, you know, every group of people, every nationality and ethnic group will do that. You know, you go to different parts of major cities and you got, you know, your Spanish-speaking folk from different Spanish-speaking countries. You have your Italians and your Asians, your other Asiatics like Chinese and Japanese and Koreans, Vietnamese. They have a food system set up that they share amongst themselves. You know, Moorish Americans and brothers and sisters in this country are still trying to figure out what our food system is. What does that look like? What do our foods look like? Because at one point, what our food system looked like was soul food, until we started realizing that that was a slave diet and it was killing us and so on and so forth. But we got to get back to what our ancestors, you know, did, agricultural practices, and build off of those different foods that we know are good for us and that are going to extend our life and take us to another level of health and mental health on top of the physical health. Like Brother Dallo mentioned, the moringa tree. We got a 5-foot healthy moringa tree growing in a raised garden bed. And I posted a link in Urban Geoponics on how to take that moringa and make it a powder, because that's how you're going to buy it in the store. You're going to go pay, you know, $10 for an ounce of it in the store. So grow your own. Manufacture your own. Powder your own. Make your own tea. And then sell that. Make money off that, because, again, that product, the moringa product, is a product that's in high demand. So organic food is what's going to save this country, and the economic impact and the economics associated with growing organic food, it may not make everybody rich, but it'll sure put you in a physical and a mental state of mind to be able to live and survive in these times that we're living in. So that's my piece on that. It's my commentary.
Okay, well, brother, I know you told me you can give me an hour and a half with at that time now, and I know you can go on forever with this hymn. I don't want you to be late for anything, but if you can hang, you can hang.
I'll hang for a little bit long.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to read off some statistics here about what we are doing. And it's called the Buying Power of Black America Today. We are spending $3.3 billion per year on tobacco products. We're spending $3 billion per year on alcohol, $29.3 billion on clothes, $19 billion on cell service, with 54% using smartphones, $9 billion a year on health care. Now, let's take a look at who is owning the businesses in America. One out of every 10 Asians, one out of every 35 white people, one out of every 54 Hispanic people, and one out of every 104 black people. One out of 15 black men are incarcerated, and there are over 240 killings, black-on-black homicides. All of this got to change. Looking at this, we got generating enough capital to create a national food bank, a national food distribution, and export this thing globally with this kind of money here that we throwing away and giving away to somebody else. And we got the ground right up on our foot.
The brothers in the revolution in the 60s talked about how poverty was a political thing, meaning it's controlled by the majority stakeholders in that particular city, state, or government. Because we can easily end starvation. We can end people's bad diseases through food, by growing and eating the right foods. Now, people are going to eat what they want to eat, and, you know, we have several mental issues that we do have to deal with, but we can eliminate starvation. In other words, nobody should ever be hungry in America. I got an opportunity. You know, we're concentrating on Jacksonville, Florida, to make that first one area, financial sector, that nobody is doing. And then we will go on to Atlanta, go on to Texas, go on to D.C. But because of what happened to Detroit, you know, they just came up with the properties. I just got a listing. There's a guy wants to sell me 20 empty plots for $2,000. Now, granted, they all spread out,
okay.
But it's plots. We're on a half a plot right now with the farm. But if we got 20 of them in Detroit, a cold area where generally most of those people don't know how to grow what we're growing here in Florida. We know the science. And you go to YouTube and learn how to do it. But do they want to do it? Do they think it's any reason to do it? You don't think so until they see it being done. But here's an opportunity for us to do this. I'm going to lock down the properties for the Moore's Equity Group so that we can go ahead and try to get something done. But, you know, 20 plots. And, you know, most plots are like, you know, like 1,200 square feet. Nice size.
Right.
You know.
Hello?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, let's tell me about the vertical growing aspect of this thing.
Well, the vertical growing is just an example of the urban farming inside of the city. When you have a smaller area, you know, generally people tend to just grow on the ground, horizontal. But to take advantage of that small space, you basically create a vertical space going upward. So, you know, you take like what we have in the hoop house, you take $5 rain gutters and you grow short-rooted plant-based products in it, like echinacea. You start an echinacea, or you build shelves going up that drain down, and you know, you can grow another. You can start utilize those as starting beds, and then take them out and then rotate them into a deeper bed. You can do the hydroponic piece where you have styrofoam beds, styrofoam squares on one pole going up. And you have maybe two or three different plants coming out of one particular square styrofoam, and you know, you have a drip tube system that goes. But it's several examples, and it's very interesting. Anybody want to look at it, you can just Google or YouTube vertical growing, and that's what we're doing. We've got a solar panel. Hopefully this week we can get out there and attach the solar panel to the PVC pipes that we have where the vegetables will be growing in stone. Or water without soil. And I'm sure Suniata can add to that.
Okay, now Suniata, when it comes to growing in stone, you use the compost in it. How do y'all go about doing that?
Well, you can use compost in a growing system where you are using primarily water, a water-based solution. But let me just back up to the stone thing. All right, the system of hydroponics is that system where you grow just based on a water solution, a water-based solution. Now, what they use in order to hold the plant steady or to hold them to be able to grow upright and to stay stable is they use hydrogen, which are clay pellets that they use in hydroponic systems, and three-quarter inch gravel. So it's almost like the hydrogen clay pellets or the three-quarter inch gravel is sort of acting. It's the stabilizer. It's like the soil substitute in terms of holding it in place. So, you know, and as long as you have enough, what you have, your essential nutrient, your nutrient-based water solution running through the gravel or running through the hydrogen clay pellets, then the roots of the plants are like magnets. You know, they move and they search and they attract the necessary elements that they need in order to grow, in order to produce fruit. So it's going to find the solution. As long as you're giving the plants or at least putting in the area of the root system the nutrients that it needs, the plant roots will definitely stretch out, grow out, and find what it is that it's looking for. So, yeah, that's all that the clay pellets and the gravel do is act as a stabilizer for the plants growing themselves. And the one of the systems that we want to focus on is we will have a little hydroponic aspect to our system at the Moore's Eastside Farm in Jacksonville. But our main component that we're getting ready to start building, I will say this, we're a little overdue on the building of it, but we are getting ready to start, is the aquaponics setup. And the beautiful thing about the aquaponics setup is that there's no need to constantly bring in a source, an outside water source to grow the food. The system of aquaponics is where you take aquaculture, which is the growing of fish, and hydroponics, which is the growing of vegetables with water, and you combine those two into what we call aquaponics. And now you have this closed loop system, this symbiotic relationship between the fish and the plants. So water is pumped from the fish to the plant bed or the grow bed, and then that water is filtered out by way of the roots, taking out the impurities and sending that water back to the fish clean. All right, so that's the beauty of the aquaponics system, is that it's a closed loop system, and there's no need to really bring in outside sources of a water-based growing solution, because the fish waste is that solution that you need. So you take that ammonia and those nitrites and nitrates inside of the fish waste, and they're converted into the necessary nitrogen that plants need in order to grow. So it is a very efficient system. It just has to be worked on and studied and maintained and set up properly. And that's another key to self-sustainability. The aquaponics system and aquaponics setup is like the ideal setup when you're talking about sustainability, especially self-sustainability for homes, for co-op villages, for larger villages, for living situations where you have multiple people that you need to feed. It is an ideal situation. So that's essentially what the clay pellets and the gravel do in terms of growing food. It's a stabilizer.
Okay, now I want to there's some more angles I want to get from that aquaponic hydroponic system. We got a caller with his hand raised, and as soon as we come back, I'm going to open up the line and get him. Then we're going to I want to get into that.
With a student loan situation, that's kind of tricky. You cannot discharge a student loan through bankruptcy. And what we recommend is one of the most powerful set of documentations that we have in our possession. It's called the Get Rid of the Student Loan Package. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on the link to HawkerArchives.org and examine the package. If you click on the little words underneath the package, the drop-down box will come about, and you can do a little brief reading there. But it is specifically designed to actually cancel the contract. Along with all of the packages in TahakaArchives.org, we give you a master library. In fact, we just put a ton of information in there under Administrative Procedure Doc. We've also added new information under the Moorish American Government. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And the information is there available for you to cancel those contracts.
Okay, area code 813. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 813. Okay. All right, brothers, we back. Now, the what do you do when, because if you got these fish in there and they're steady swimming around in there and they're having the babies and stuff, how do you handle that? What are you going to do with the smaller fish?
Well, you can basically what the science behind that is removing the larger fish at a point in time so as they don't eat the younger fish, because you know fish will eat their own. So, but you're going to have reproduction to take place. That's just natural. You know, you could get into the business where you're actually breeding the fish and then just cultivating them in that manner to continue to raise them, or you can just bring in fingerlings. You know, you can import fingerlings in to grow in your system and not have to really worry about the babies and separating the adults from the minnows. But we don't want to bring anything in. You know, one of the aims of urban geoponics is to make sure that we are creating a system where we're breeding the fish and we can harvest the fingerlings and then put them in a separate tank from the adults and then allow them to grow and get to a point where we can either reintroduce them to the tank with the larger fish, or, you know, we'll just have two separate grow tanks. So we'll have two separate tanks where the fish are growing in. And then you can just alternate between both tanks or however many that you have. But basically you just separate them. Again, it's just a system where you have to pay attention and you separate them and make sure that the adults don't eat the babies. That's all it really boils down to.
Okay, because I'm looking at the, when you're talking about, if you got several lots and you're planning on creating these systems on this lot, you still don't have to bring anything in because the fish are going to reproduce, and you take the babies or the adults and put them in the new system, and so you still have the, you've duplicated, you got two systems and it's just steady going. You haven't bought any new fish because the fish is doing bringing in all the new fish you need. This is amazing, and it's all very, very profitable for us. Now, hold on. I think this guy's got his hand raised again. Okay. Area code 813. Are you there this time?
Greetings,
813.
Yes, greetings, brothers. This is Nura, Sister Nura from Tampa. How you doing?
What's on your mind?
Very good.
Peace.
How are you?
I'm good. It's like you guys keep cutting off, and I can't tell if I can get on or not. But I've been listening to everything you're saying, and it all sounds wonderful. And I'm just trying to figure out how can we fit into all this here. I had mentioned the process from growth to the end product. You know, the growing part, the process, value-added products, marketing, and distribution. And it's kind of broad what you're saying, but it's not. There's no, like, details. Do you have some specific process going right now besides the – I know you got the composting and you got your farm. So what happens after that? I mean, how can someone else, like, in a distant area – fit into what you're doing right now?
Indeed. Well, what we want to do, sis, is we kind of keep it general.
Let me say this first. Let me answer the question.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. She said it's general. It's general because of the topic of the night is about the financing of what we're already doing. So you're kind of coming in the middle of what we've already started doing from January. The first summit, and you can go to summitofthemoors.com and hear Sundiata's presentation, bits and pieces of what we initially say we're going to do. And what you can do in Tampa is find you an area that we can grow on. We set it up, and we basically set up a Moore's Eastside Farm in Tampa, Florida. What takes place after we grow is what I mentioned earlier tonight on conversation. We take the food. We may have a list of professional restaurants. We have a list of friends or individuals that are waiting for certain food. We call them, or they call us. They see the post on Facebook, and they purchase. Those things that are not purchased, we do not compost. We get rid of them. We try to get rid of everything. And that money is going back into the pool for everyone that is invested inside of Moore's Eastside Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
as far
in your area,
property, as far as the property, how big would it need to be?
I'm sorry, say it again. How big would it need to be?
The land or the plot, how big would it need to be?
That's according to you. You can have it as small, as big as you want to do. As big as you want it. But you definitely want a nice size. You know, if you take an empty plot that normally a house will go on, that's a good urban area. The first thing you should do is look for an area inside the city where our people are at, where we dominate, where there are no healthy grocery stores or health food stores. That's primarily a food desert. So our part of our mission is to go in and set up a farm. And now we give those people immediate access to affordable fresh fruit and vegetables, along with everything else. And so outside of the farming, then we look at the real estate aspect of that. And then we move in on some of those abandoned properties or foreclosed properties or properties that's affordable for us to take in. And then we move the like-minded individuals in. And now we're surrounding the farm areas with like-minded individuals. Now
okay,
you have a community.
That's kind of moving kind of fast for me. But what I'm thinking is that with the
so
using
get your plot
part of
and some individuals.
Okay, we got our
farms.
We'll come.
I mean, only 2 to 3.5 hours.
You cut out.
Then what?
The line cut out.
We got to come down. All right, can you hear me now?
Yeah, no. I can hear you.
Okay, so we will come down once you find your area. You want to have access to water or a neighbor's house, so you can do what we did, which is set up the barrel system of recycling the rainwater into the barrel system. And water the plants like that.
Okay.
And
okay. Now, I have more in mind the aquaponic system. So, do you recommend buying one of those kits? You know, you can get a kit and then start from there with two like gravel beds. How would you
do
that?
Those are for individuals. That's like for a nice little house. But if you're talking about we're talking about for commercial growth.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So how would you do that?
Okay,
let me
chime in. This is Sundiata. For commercial growth, we have to build a system. You know, the kits that are out there are for they're just for small personal use. So what we would do is replicate in the various cities that we look to set up in. The it's going to be two commercial systems that we build. One is kind of like it mimics a river system, and then there's another one where we use some already constructed material. So what we want to do is be able to produce a tank that holds, maybe 10,000, 15,000 gallons of water, because it's one fish per gallon of water. So if you could imagine those numbers like that, where we can take, you know, we can have 10,000 fish, 10,000 tilapia, 10,000 lake perch growing in one system. It would just take a little bit of planning for us to come down, you know, help you all find the right spot, find the right location within the city, like Davo said, in an urban area where that would be considered a food desert, because that is part of our mission through uplifting humanity, is to eliminate these food deserts. So we want to be able to introduce these systems and this food accessibility to the people in those areas. And then when we come in and we can set up those systems in those areas, then we're on
you're
the process
off,
of we're on the course of actually creating part-time jobs and eventually full-time jobs for people in those areas.
You broke up again, Sonia.
Yeah, I missed everything you said that. But the 15,000 gallon tank, How much space will we need for that as far as the land?
Well, you don't need a whole lot of land for one aquaponic setup. But if just say you happen to be interested in the aquaponic systems primarily, right, where you
right.
don't necessarily want to grow food in a raised bed or in the ground, but you want to just grow the food using the aquaponics tank, then, you know, a third of an acre, you know, a quarter of an acre. You know,
okay.
it doesn't have to be anything magnanimous, but one of the ideals and you know, in the various territories that have these locations, they're all not going to be uniform. You know how you go to a Walmart in almost every city, they just look the same. You go to a Publix grocery store, they just all look the same. But each one of these places, each one of these locations is going to be different. They're going to have their own personality, their own things that they specialize in. So if your location is going to specialize in aquaponics and fish production, as well as produce grown from the fish, then that's what it will be. You know, we want to definitely move in accordance with what you and your organization's mission is, and what you all see.
Brother Sundiata, I kind of missed a lot of what you're saying. I got a pretty good idea, but your phone keeps going out for some reason. But I thank you so much for this information I got. So I need about a quarter of an acre of land, and it has to be in an urban area. It couldn't be in a rural area out like where I live.
Well, no, we're not excluding rural areas. We just want to introduce these growing practices and fresh food to the people in those areas, in urban areas. We like for it to be in those areas, but no, we're not excluding rural areas at all. So if you're in a rural area and you have the space out there, you know, it's still no different. We can still create the farm and then just bring the food to the people in those urban areas. So, don't make that mistake of excluding this whole conversation and operation just because you're in a rural area. Absolutely not. We are most definitely interested in rural and urban areas. Yes, sis, absolutely.
That's good. That's what I wanted to hear, because I would much rather do it here. We do have a small piece of land in urban area, but we have a little park there for the children, and they did start their little garden there. We last Saturday we had the children plant fruits and vegetables. But how much do you think that will estimate, you know, just like a rough estimate, how much that cost to get a aquaponic system set up on about a quarter of an acre land?
Well, one aquaponic system with the ideas, with the type of system that we're going to create, you can build it for little under $3,000.
Okay.
So that's just a general dollar amount in terms of the system itself. Wood, pond liners, you know, labor, just the materials and supplies and a little bit of labor is right around $3,000. So if we wanted to do more than one of those systems where you're growing on a commercial scale, two, three systems, then, you know, of course, you know, just double or triple that amount. But one system we could most likely create right around $3,000.
Is there any way that you can send me like the materials that you would need to get one started?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's now I have your contact information, correct? From the
yes, you do.
What'd you say, sis? You broke out.
Yes, it's Nura-International@.
Okay. Yes.
Got it.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I have your information. Right. So yes, we'll continue to collaborate, and I can send you a short list of what the materials and supplies would be, and then we can move forward from there.
All right, thank you so much, and thank you, brothers, for having this. And we will be at the January Summit of the Moors. This is just so exciting. I'm so glad to see actual brothers and sisters moving, and they're really active. They're not just talking; they're really doing. So I really appreciate all of you, and peace and love.
All right, peace and
love, sister. Thank you for calling in.
Peace.
Okay, we back. Let's take a look at
everybody
the marketable
there?
Side of the thing. Yeah, Diallo, you still with us? Brother Diallo, you
everybody.
With us?
Yeah, you
okay?
You
I'm
gonna break. Hey, man, Tahaka, we're gonna have to work on that prepaid internet you got over there, brother. I don't know what's
man, leave me alone. I got another caller. Y'all hold on a minute, man. I got another caller.
Tahaka, you still on dial up, man? We got to get you off the dial up.
y'all make me put my computer back in the Cracker Jack box. Let me open up this other line. Y'all hold on a minute. We're going to open up this other line.
Most of us regard the Internal Revenue Service as a monster. But if you deal with them correctly and put them in a position where they are forced to deal with the circumstances by law, your chances of winning against them becomes 99.9%, if you do it right. Inside the United States, it operates on a continuous series of contracts under the terms of contract law. You never get angry, you don't raise your voice, you don't need to make any threats, but you simply supply them with information regarding the problem that they are having with you and put them in a position where they have to answer your questions by law. It's just that simple. We have a situation inside the United States where people are just outright fearful of the Internal Revenue Service, but you cannot succeed at anything if you carry any fear. So what I would recommend you to do, go to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Click on TahakaArchives.org. Go over there. You'll see the Get Rid of the Internal Revenue Service package that's specially designed for your success in dealing with a private company who seems to think that they are above the rules and regulations and laws of the United States Supreme Court. There's a way to deal with them. www.newfreehelpgroup.com.
Okay, Morris, we back. Area code 920. Could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment? 920.
This is Najee Bay, calling from Green Bay, Wisconsin Territory. How you brother
doing?
All
right, brother. Hey, man,
okay,
we just fine.
I thought about something when the brother was speaking on the compost and how it creates heat or whatnot. Now, couldn't that heat be used to heat a home or a greenhouse or something like that?
Absolutely.
What do you say, Phil?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, my brother. Some folks who are living off the grid are taking the heat generated from compost and heating their water inside of a little standout or standalone showers on their property. So if you have enough compost, then yeah, you can take that heat. You can transfer it into whatever it is that you need heated. There are a lot of different levels and forms of technologies out where you can see how those things are put together and constructed. But yeah, you can definitely do it. And in fact, one of the tools that urban farmers are using in your northern areas, like Green Bay, like Milwaukee and places like that, they're using compost inside of greenhouses and actually on the outsides of, I know, and using the compost on the outside. They line the greenhouse with the compost to keep that heat, to generate heat inside of that greenhouse. So, yes, brother, you absolutely can use compost to generate heat for other things also.
Well, thanks, brother.
I hope you caught everything I said, because I know the phone is breaking up. Is there something that you missed?
No, I heard everything.
Okay, good.
All right, but let's
all right.
Peace.
All right, peace, brother.
Okay, brother.
Brother Tahaka, I also wanted to remind everybody that Urban Geoponics will have their is going to launch their blog talk tomorrow night at 8 p.m. So I just wanted to put that blurb out there. Urban Geoponics will launch its blog talk tomorrow night at 8 p.m. We want everybody to tune in. Myself, along with brother Dalo, will be on the line, right. and we'll be touching on some issues of self sustainability and go deeper into the agricultural piece.
Okay. Well, now I'm going to need the call in number from you. So when you get that set up, give me a shout and make sure I got that so I can dial in and make sure I'm there.
Absolutely. Sure will.
Okay. All right, that'll give me a chance to work on this hemp. Cracker Jack box, y'all say I got over him. And make sure that is working right. Okay, now, the markets that are available, you know, because I know I go into a grocery store. This is what I see. When I go into Winn-Dixie, am I breaking up? When I go in Winn-Dixie, I see seedless grapes, seedless watermelons, seedless this, hybridized plants and all this stuff. And I read the labels on these fruits and vegetables, and I'm finding out these stores are shipping stuff in from China. They're getting it from Guatemala. It's coming from Argentina, South America, Central America, everywhere. So to me, with what you guys got, y'all got a major market right there in the yard. I mean, you know, what would you think about that?
You want to say something on that, Brother Dalo? Hello?
Dalo, you with us?
Yeah, my phone on mute.
I have a phone on mute. You own that.
Okay. I'm sorry, what was it? Repeat the question for me, brother.
Okay, I was saying that when I go into the grocery store, I see all these hybridized plants in there, seedless watermelon, seedless grapes, seedless this, seedless that, and I read the labels on the fish and the fruits and vegetables, and this stuff is being shipped as far away as China. And you got stuff coming
right.
from Central America, Argentina, Bolivia, all these places. And so it appears that you have a market right there in our own yard.
Yeah. One thing we have to understand, again, is business. America is weak financially because it imports more than it exports, just like any third world country. And Dr. Chancellor Williams. And I recommend this book highly, The Destruction of Black Civilization. If you read this book, you'll see exactly what we are implementing. That's The Destruction of Black Civilization by Dr. Williams. But the so-called black community is also like a third world nation. You know, when you go to our communities, we don't own the grocery stores. We don't own the gas stations. We don't own anything. But we are the dominant force in that neighborhood. In other words, everybody sets up where we're at because they know we don't have anything that we own or control and probably not even interested in owning a gas station or Walgreens corporation franchise. But we're just going to rather spend the money in it. Recently in the news, they talked about China spending $500 million on an underwater ice wall to help slow down the nuclear leakage in the water. Now, remember, America buys a lot of its imports. Go ahead, what's that?
Yeah, some of them
America buys a lot of its seafood from China or the Asian nations. The Asians are basically just stripping the seafloors of the seafood. And anything that come along in the nets, you can find documentaries on that. So it will be in our best interest for those who eat seafood or even just in the business of selling seafood locally to farm raise or either, you know, get into the business locally where you're at. So we, Morris Eastside Farms, wherever they're at, we good for the local economy. See, when you're good for the local economy, you're good for politics and you're good for the people in that area because you aren't shipping. See, right now, collard greens are out of season.
Now, people are still getting collard greens. They probably get them somewhere else, or they're just not as good. It's a lot of fruit and vegetables that are not in season, but because of capitalism and what they try to say people, the American people's demand for them, which I really doubt is their demand. It's just a matter of fact that since they have it, that people choose it. They continue to make things year-round. And, you know, Walt Disney World was one of the first pioneers of hydroponics, where it was growing a lot, where they still do large amounts of fruit and vegetables in their in some of the underground facilities that they have in Orlando. Mm-hmm. But we get into the business of buying local, growing local, we helping the economy out. That's a few less things that the city would have to purchase outside of itself. And that's why, you know, the Urban Geoponics System Corporation does business with the city, does business with the state, does business with the government as a vendor or bidder or, you know, any aspect that we can get in the business line, we can get into it because, we're about being the providers, not the ones with the hands out. Not like some of these community gardens that Europeans come in the hood, they sit up for 2 years, make a grant, get their friends some money, and they're gone. This is something different. Moore's Eastside Farm is not a community garden. Something different, a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
We changed the game in this thing. And
okay,
America
now,
has
what
no
about?
Go ahead. Go ahead, bro.
What about the employment of the people in the community where the farm is located eventually?
But that's based on the size and the production of the farm. And solely on that particular director. I'm the national director over the farms, and Sundia is the president over the national. So, like, for example, when we set up different ones in different states, that person will be the director for that particular state. And if there's several in that state, then we'll have several assistant directors. Like for example, Miami and Tampa, they want Moore's Eastside Farm, so we'll have assistant directors, assistant presidents over those particular operations. And now if this size is producing enough where it can go beyond just having volunteers and create maybe one or two part-time jobs, and that's what it is. But then you also could do something more creative, like we've experimented here with the Asiatic juices. You take the juices and you take some of the product from the farms and you put it inside those juices. Now you created a product straight from the farm to be able to sell. So that's creating a small self-sufficient little product for an individual, a couple of people that want to sell something. You see, so even if we can't sell tomatillas, we couldn't sell all the tomatillas, so we created, a jar of a few things of guacamole. And then we say, well, we allow an individual to say, well, this would be their product in partnership with the Moore's Eastside Farm because they made the product. So I think it's just partnering up with the people who can be more creative than the people that are already there. So
okay,
we don't
lose. Now,
everybody wins in this situation.
What about people who want to set this up in their cities, but their cities have all of the stores and the produce stores and stuff that are owned by foreigners? How would they go about dealing with that? Would they use existing markets, or would they try to create their own markets in there? How would they do that?
Okay, you take a bottle of gasoline, put a
mm-hmm.
T-shirt in it. No, I'm joking. No, what we're doing is setting up an independent economic system. Well, we wouldn't need their stores. Why? Because we will create our own stores. Right next to them, right across the street from them, just like a Burger King across from McDonald's or Walgreens from Walmart. See, when we look at being totally independent, when we talk about food sovereignty, that means we're controlling every aspect of our financial career, whatever have you. So we wouldn't have to look to kick somebody out of the neighborhood when you just build what it is you want. Versus arguing about what we're not doing, we just simply do it. So now our time and our energies are focused on doing and not what, those people who allow the foreigners to come in their neighborhood, set up shop, just don't support them.
build your own,
okay,
and get it popping.
So we talking about boycott
or buy them out.
Okay. All right.
That's the
well,
approach.
I'll tell you what, this is fantastic, and I'm definitely going to be tuning in tomorrow night so that we can get more in depth in this. But I'm so fascinated by the hydro and aquaponic systems because I want to see that here in Jacksonville. I want to see this thing actually a self-sustaining system that just continuously just, you know, just bring forth and could, you know, all natural, you know, change the look of the people, you know, it could provide employment for the community corporation, all these things can come out of there. The packaging products, sales, everything is right there in the ground. This is quite amazing.
You're right, Brother Tark. Everything is right there. It's right there for us to do. Like Brother Dallow said, enough with the talking. We just got to do it. I mean, we accomplished quite a bit from January. I mean, and this is just from people who saw the vision and they dedicated, you know, set aside a certain amount of financial resources for the creation or for the manifestation of this vision. And we've done it. You know, we've done it. And it's just going to continue to get better. And now we're looking to expand it into other cities. You know, but we need collaboration. We need cooperation, collaboration, and partnerships. You know, that's the only way that it's going to happen. You know, somebody could give us, you know, somebody could give the Moore's Equity Group $1 million. You know, and we can try our best to do what we can do with that. But if we don't have the people that buy into these ideas and that believe in these ideas and these concepts,
mm-hmm,
and know the benefit and value of it, then it'll be very difficult to get it going the way we envision it. So as long as we have the people on our side, as long as we have other brothers and sisters who are ready to see this vision materialize and come to fruition, then, you know, nothing can stop us, basically. We're just going to keep setting up these farms, taking land in different areas and creating these systems. So it's there. It's right there for us. Everything is in order. We just need the people to do it. And I think from the first two summits, we've been able to galvanize a very healthy group of people that want to see these things come to fruition. So, people just need to be ready to see these things pop up. You know, it's going to be like a pop-up box. They're going to turn around and just going to see more of the Eastside Farm in their neighborhood. So it's just that serious. So we're going to keep that moving.
Okay, fantastic. No. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, popping up like Family Dollar everywhere on the corner.
Oh, yeah. Every
That's
time
right.
I look around, they got another one of them. See what I'm selling all that cheap merchandise to them, man.
Right.
Don't last no time, man. You be, you know, I be listening to certain people, and they are like addicted to Family Dollar, you know, and I be like, you know, because I'm the type of person, I don't like to buy nothing I don't need. If I need
That's
it,
right.
then I'll buy it. You know, to go in there and call something on sale, there's no such thing as a sale. Are you out of sale? Prison. Buy a product wholesale and then mark it up. If you pay $25 for it, they mark it up to $75. And then they put a big X across it and mark it down to $60. And you think, ooh, it's on sale. No.
Right. And subpar merchandise. Subpar at its finest.
I took marketing. So I know what they be doing. They going on because I had a guy who been in Korea, and I wanted to sell 35mm cameras. That guy told me, he said, if you buy these 35mm cameras, you buy 500 of them, he said, I'll give them to you $10 a piece. I said, okay, and I know that if I can get them from Korea through ship a freight forwarder. And get them down here and warehouse them and stuff and pay the little meet them halfway in the ocean and bring them over into the United States, I can mark them up and sell them for $150 a piece. And but then I can go back and put a big X across it and say just $79.99. That is a sale.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, that's exactly what happens. But now in the situation that we have now, we're talking about all appreciable assets. We're talking about organic food where we are locked into these cities and we are surrounded by all these grocery stores. And one of the most amazing things that I see when I go in a grocery store, they have a section in there called the health food aisle. I said, okay, if the whole store full of food and you got a health food aisle, well, if I go down one of the other aisles, is this the poison aisle? Because you got the health food stacked in one spot, so what's the rest of the stuff? It is amazing.
Yeah,
but,
that's the truth.
Talking about
the truth. Yeah, because one thing that we're dealing with here is superior product. We're dealing with superior products. We're not dealing with anything that's tainted, pesticides filled, or chemically grown. It's all untainted, and it's cared for through natural and organic methods. The methodology that we employ is all natural, that everybody is getting the very best of the products that come from the Moore's East Side Farm. So the product quality is superior. It's unmatched in terms of what we're doing in these urban areas. The aquaponic setup that we're gonna see sprout up all across the state, and like I'm excited about the Sister Nura in Tampa. I mean, you know, she says, hey, this is what we want to create. Then that's what we need to create: superior product and being able to place those products. So even if we want to put our products in stores, you know, then that's good. That's great. It opens up our market share. But the key is to work on getting our own front stand. You know, we need to be able to set up a little fruit and veggie stand out front of the farm or out front at a farmer's market and being able to vend at the farmer's market and then actually acquire property, which we're very close to doing, and be able to set up our own grocery store, like Brother Dallo said earlier, have that cafe, mm-hmm. have an internet cafe, along with fresh fruits and veggies, along with, internet service and teas and smoothies and things like that. You know, we already got people who are doing those things. We just need to be able to have them supplied with fresh fruits. You know, we need a blueberry orchard. We need a blueberry orchard where we're growing tons and tons of blueberries, along with tons and tons of strawberries. We need a fruit orchard. I know how to get that type of growing off the ground, where we can have a fruit orchard set up to where you don't skip a beat in terms of revenue. You're not just growing one fruit. You're not just growing oranges, or you're not just growing pecans, or not just growing persimmons. You know, you're growing a varied orchard and type of fruit throughout the year on a massive scale, so that I'm talking olives, everything. We can create our own olive oil. Olive trees grow wonderfully here in the Panhandle area, from Jacksonville all the way to Pensacola and even up into like Alabama and Georgia. Olive trees. So we have this huge orchard where we're able to produce enough product to sell and supply our own fruit and veggie stands. You know, we have a brother that came to the summit from Washington, D.C., who has his own smoothie business. His first question was, how can we set it up to make sure that I'm buying my produce, I'm getting my fruit from Moore's East Side Farm? That's what we have to have the vision to be able to create, and that's what we need to be working on, especially if folks have acres of land. We need to be able to produce these orchards that are going to supply various venues and various businesses with those products that we can create from those fruit orchards.
Well, let me ask you this. Tell me about the bitter gourd plant.
The what plant?
Can we, the bitter gourd. Could we grow that here, you think?
The bitter gourd? I'm pretty sure we can. I mean, Florida, the panhandle is a very, it's an environment where you can grow year-round, you know, without hoop houses and without greenhouses. So whatever the temperate conditions are for a bitter gourd, which are, I'm pretty sure it's just mild spring, mild fall temperature.
Call drop. Okay, you back? Suniata?
I'm here. I can hear you.
Okay. He his call dropped. But anyway, are you familiar with the bitter gourd plant, Diallo?
I am not. Tell me about it.
Okay. Okay, because I had a young lady brought one by here. And this thing here, you can Google it in. She was, yeah. Can you hear me?
Tell me about
Hello?
The plant. Yeah, tell me about the plant.
Okay. I'm going to tell you. Wait a minute. I'm going to tell you. This plant, it deals with, the way she explained it to me, it helps people with diabetes, high blood pressure, you name it. It has a multiple healing properties in it. And so I was wondering if I could, if it could be grown here. You could type it in the Google. It's the bitter gourd plant. It looks like a striped.
That sounds like the morango tree.
No.
The morango tree has over 300.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was saying the morango tree has over 300 medicinal uses with it, the one that we have out at the farm now. And I got a pod, so we're going to have about 12 of them soon. And then each one of those trees is going to give a pod. So eventually we'll have lots full of moringa trees, coconut palms. We'll have stuff, exotic fruits that heal. And that's proactive for melanated people. That's the one thing that makes Moore's East Farm different from any other, because we'll be growing this stuff. Not only will it be organic, non-GMO, but it'll be very special to those with melanated food. We have to get to the foods that talks and that's related to our DNA, that strengthens and cleans it, and not just anything that you buy at a Publix, Winn-Dixie, or Kroger.
Okay. All right. Let me open up this line and see if it's him. Here we go, 561.
Peace. I got my phone cut off. Sundiata.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I figured that was you coming back. Are you familiar with the bitter gourd plant? You ever run into that?
I personally haven't run into it. I've heard of it, and I heard you mention it before. But I was just listening to you in terms of the properties and the medicinal properties of it, and what they say is good for. And just kind of go off of what Dalo was saying also, is that, you know, like the moringa is one of those superfoods also. You know, and in addition, you know, we can get to the point where we're growing goji berries. Goji berries is another superfood. You know, we need
goji
to have plenty of aloe at all of our farms. Aloe is a superfood. You know, so it's those foods and those types of those types of produce and vegetables that we need to have in order to create healing environments for our people. You know, so the bitter gourd, the moringa, the aloe, the goji, you know, it's so many things that the soursop, all of these different exotic fruits and veggies that can be grown. You know, it can be grown right in a raised bed. I mean, like I said, the moringa tree is looking fabulous. And it's just growing in a raised bed that's like 4 feet by 40 feet long. And that thing is just going crazy. So, you know, yeah, we need to be able to. Say it again, brother.
How big will it grow?
Man, the moringa tree go 20 feet.
Yeah, it get to 15, 20 feet.
Man.
Easy.
Wow.
It'll keep going.
So, you know, we're looking. I mean, this is the same tree. When you do your research on it, you Google moringa tree, and they call it the tree of life. When you do your research on it, you'll see that this is a tree that they're actually utilizing in places like in remote places in Africa and South America where starvation is running rampant. This is the tree that they're using to bring children back to life. I mean, it provides the nourishment that it needs to bring young folks out of that malnourished state of being. You know, we're talking like 10 times the amount of calcium as 10 times the amount of vitamin C as oranges, 15 times the amount of iron as your best leafy green. I mean, it has everything that you need. It is a complete plant. It is a whole food. And those are the types of fruits and vegetables that we have to have on our site, for sure.
Okay, now, I want to get back to these berries because I know that berries, when you're talking about dealing with berries, the components of berries and the beneficial health aspect of berries is tremendous. And I think a lot of people don't know that. And
right.
So when you mentioned the go-go berry?
Goji berries. Yeah, these it's considered a superfood, and that can be grown in this region as well, if I'm not mistaken. I have to do a little bit more research to make sure I'm certain on that, but I'm pretty sure it can be grown here. I think some other folks that I've heard of have experimented with growing it here. But yeah, berries like that, you know, blueberries, blackberries, those things have some serious properties in them that work on the cellular level to create that healing that we need. And like you mentioned, the diabetes, high cholesterol,
yeah.
High blood pressure, the things that really affect our people the most, those types of berries and fruits can counter and act as a antithesis to those diseases. It can really come in and counter those diseases and counter those physical afflictions that a lot of us deal with. You know, skin issues, you know, scalp issues. I mean, all of these things. You know, that's like I said, the aloe. We got to make sure that we get the aloe growing on all of our locations. Everybody needs aloe anyway. As a medicinal plant and as a
plant. Okay, now what about the pomegranate?
Same thing, brother. Same thing. Pomegranate, full of antioxidants. Full of antioxidants. And again, it works on a cellular level, and it does wonders for your immune system. It does absolute wonders for your immune system. Yeah, you can go on and on with all of the different fruits and veggies that are out there. They all each have their specific characteristics that make them special. But you do have a few that are so high and dense in their nutrient potency that it separates them. It puts them in a class of their own. So, you know, it just depends. Again, that goes back to the planning, the business planning of what to grow and how much of it to grow, to be able to bring that to our people and to be able to create financial and economic opportunities from those types of fruits and vegetables. But we got to plan those things out, you know. We don't want to just be growing one vine of bitter gourd, you know, just for the sake of saying that we're growing it, you know, or have one blueberry bush just for the sake of saying that we're growing it. You know, we need to be able to produce it on a massive scale so that we can make a difference with it. It's one thing if somebody comes to a Moore's East Side Farm and say, oh, wow, you guys have, y'all are growing everything. This is really cool. You know, it looks good. But something just looking good versus what we can actually do to make a difference and have a large impact on multiple peoples at a time is what we're looking to do. That is, and in fact, that's what we're doing with the Morris Eastside Farm in Jacksonville. You know, multiple people have come by to purchase kale and lettuce from last season. A lot of the families who come to volunteer at the farm have benefited from, you know, the tomatoes and the okra and the squash and the eggplant and the basil. That has been grown there. So, you know, people are benefiting. It just, we just need to replicate these systems on a larger scale and in multiple locations in order to have that profound impact that we're, that we know that we can have.
Okay. Well, I'm in absolute agreement with you. Have y'all considered grapefruit trees and muscadine vines and plums and stuff like that? Are y'all gonna?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's talk to get some a grape orchard going in another territory, in another state. So, you know, we've just had those discussions. You know, we've talked about it. The muscadines make a great wine. You know, there's tons of money in organic wine. You know, you go to your health food store, and if they sell you know, alcohol, or if they sell wine, you'll see the price. You'll see the price tag attached to organic wine. It's not even funny. And if you are a connoisseur of wines, then if you had a regular red wine, and then you tasted an organic red wine of the same caliber, then you would probably be able to taste the difference in the two. And that's another interesting thing about the taste of food when it's grown organically versus inorganically, full of, you know, chemicals and GMOs. So, but yes, those things are definitely in the talks. The grape orchard, that what I mentioned earlier about having a fruit orchard, being able to grow year-round, and always having revenue generated from those fruits, yes, the plum trees would have to be a part of that equation. Plums, peaches, olive trees, walnuts, pecans, persimmons, blueberries, you know, and grapefruit, various citrus, you know, all of those things grow really well here. All those things grow really, really well here in this part of the region, in this part of the country. So this is just one of those areas. And then, you know, let's not even talk about going south where it's more tropical. Now we can get into the production of different trees that you won't see anywhere else in the United States except South Florida. You know, you won't see these things anywhere else. And you'd have to go, like, to the Caribbean to see these trees. So as these farms are growing, you know, we're getting ready to have one in Miami, in Tampa, so we'll be able to grow some of these exotics in those territories as well.
Okay. Well, I have to agree with you because I've been down there. I've seen them, and it is a whole different world. I was watching this guy. He was experimenting. He was trying to find out how plant and animal life had grown so big in the prehistoric world. And he set up this system where he could change the biosphere, and he was able to grow these plants humongous, and he put the insects and stuff in there, and he did the same thing with them. They were growing humongous too, and he had come to the conclusion that the biosphere and the ionosphere and stuff was different, so he duplicated that and was able to do that. I found that quite amazing. The plant life and the plant world and agriculture, it is a phenomenon and a solution to the problem that we have before is hunger in the whole world. I had this little video footage. It got so old, it's done wore out. Well, it was this African guy, and he didn't. Where he was, he didn't grow anything uniformly. Everything that he had there, he had all these different plants and trees and stuff. And he had this one tree. He said, "This tree produces fruit
year round. He said, there's never a time when there's no fruit on this tree. And then he said he was watching this snake, these two snakes fighting. And both of them were poisonous snakes. And one got the best of the other and bit him. And after he bit him, he crawled off. But the one that got him bit, so he watched him. And he said he watched the snake go and begin to eat from this plant. And after he ate from this plant, he sat there a long time. And finally, he was able to crawl away, you know, unscathed from the thing. And so he went and got the plant that the snake was eating from and started growing it
right
around his house. And anytime anybody got a cut, a snake bite, anything, you go get that plant and pew, that's the end of that. So
yeah, yeah.
This is a very, very phenomenal thing. And I wish I had this footage again, and I wish I could know who this guy was so I could go and make some copies of that, because everybody needs to see that. That was amazing how he was growing that stuff and different plants and stuff that he had that I had never seen and didn't know anything about. But
mm-hmm.
he had a good thing going on where he was. Right away
yeah.
in Africa.
Right. And that word that you mentioned a minute ago, biosphere, just kind of plays right into one of the avenues that we need some people to step up in this particular aspect of agriculture. It's called permaculture. And permaculture
mm-hmm.
is the ability to sort of recreate a self-sustaining habitat, a self-sustaining biosphere, a self-sustaining area where there are trees, like fruit trees, different types of perennials that grow. So we want to be able to, like asparagus. Asparagus is a perennial. So once it establishes itself and it starts to grow the way you see it, like in the grocery store, then you can chop it, harvest it, and then you don't have to replant it or pull it up any longer. It just continues to reproduce. So we want to create a self-sustaining habitats through the growing of fruit trees, and the science of that is permaculture. So you can create these habitats that once you establish them, they'll be able to kind of keep themselves going, similar to a rainforest. You look at a rainforest, you know, those, you know, leaves fall off and they go back into the ground. They provide nutrients into the forest floor. Nuts and fruits fall on the forest floor, so you have animals that are able to retrieve those things on the floor, as well as animals that are able to harvest, eat these things up in the trees, and create this situation where it's like an edible landscape,
mm-hmm.
with blueberry bushes and things like that that come back every year. You don't have to replant a blueberry bush. You know, you don't have to replant these fruit trees. So you create this this environment of a self-sustaining environment where everything is edible. And one aspect, in that particular aspect of the science of permaculture, is something that we need some people to get into. We need some folks that are going to, in fact, one sister from Fort Lauderdale, Tammy Bay, she was at the summit. The first day of the summit, she was up in Jacksonville for two reasons, to attend a permaculture conference as well as attend the summit. So she was able to attend the summit on the second day. But she
mm-hmm.
is all about permaculture and growing these edible landscapes and these food forests. But we need more than one person. We need more than just me talking about this stuff. We need other brothers and sisters who want to really come in and put themselves in the middle of this movement and put themselves in the middle of what agriculture and horticulture is really all about. So... So we need folks involved in the permaculture scene as well. In fact, I'll post the link in Urban Geoponics on Facebook with a fella who's giving a lecture on permaculture, like a permaculture workshop. Sister Tammy Bay sent that to me, and I need to be responsible enough to share that with everybody else. So I'll post that in the Facebook page later on this evening. So, but Brother Tarker, I got to take off. I want to say peace to all of the gods and goddesses
out there in the world. Any last questions you may have for me before I go?
Yeah. Give us one more time. Tell us about your blog talk tomorrow. Did you hear me? Brother Suniyada.
Hey, you were cut off completely, Brother Taharka. You're going to have to state that again real quick.
Okay, I was just saying, run it by us again about the blog talk show tomorrow. What's the title of the show?
Urban Geoponics with Suniyada. So that's
okay,
the title of the show. Yeah, we're a part of the Abundance Network, so we'll be operating out of the Abundance Network. And tomorrow at 8 p.m., we'll be touching on some of the same issues that we touched on tonight. We'll go in a little bit deeper in terms of sustainability, in terms of agriculture and food forests, permaculture, all of these things, aquaponics. But tomorrow's our debut. It's our first show. So we just want to introduce the people to some of the things that we're going to be talking about. So that's tomorrow night at 8 p.m., Urban Geoponics with Suniyada.
Okay. All right. Make sure I get that call-in number, man. And I certainly appreciate you being on the call.
Absolutely. I'm going to send that to you in a little bit. So, all right. Peace to everybody.
Okay.
All right. One love.
Peace.
Thank you.
All right. Peace.
Okay, Brother Sunada's gone, and we certainly appreciate him being on. And Diallo, before we continue, I'm going to take a little quick break, and we'll be right back. So y'all hold on, ladies and gentlemen.
My gum is my gum. Timmy, Tim, Timmy, my
some eat some some. Bitter to the belly, what is sweet to the tongue? Like the little girl, she a run up and down.
One cup of coffee, then I go. One cup of coffee, then I go.
How you go?
One cup of coffee,
then I go.
One cup of coffee, then I go. Did I brought some money, like your lawyer said to do? Ain't nothing funny.
Ragamuffin, this is now Junior Gang. Telling every woman, praying on for them. And I say, love him, give him something strong. Make him the better, you make him galang. Love him to the last for long. Make him that him will take a next woman. I say, love.
When it comes to student loans, sometimes things are a little bit tricky. You have to understand that you cannot discharge a student loan through bankruptcy. This contract has to be canceled. We have some special documentation specifically designed for getting rid of the student loan and also dealing with the child support. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and if you have a child support situation or if you have a student loan, you want to access the Get Rid of the Student Loan package. It is designed for dealing with both of them. Along with that package comes Tahaka Archives Master Library. So you'll be thoroughly equipped to deal with this situation and go on to deal with other situations that may be occurring in your life. The bottom line is to detach yourself from these income-sapping situations that you have been put into by Rome. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, access to get rid of the student loan package. That is a major problem that's going on inside the United States, and the way to eliminate that problem is located there. When you get to newfreehelpgroup.com, examine that page, click on the link, www.tahakaarchives.org. That'll take you right over there where the packages are. If you click under the little wording under the photograph, a little drop-down menu will come in and give you additional information. However, once you do that, if you decide to do that, give me a call at area code 904-303-9061, and we would get with you and give you any other additional information that you would need in dealing with the cancellation of the contract on your student loan. Okay? All right.
Okay, we're back. Brother Diallo, you still with me?
Always.
All right, my brother. Now, this we finna get to the best part now. Because I went out there and I saw them bees out there. Tell me about them bees, man. What the bees doing?
Well, you know, the bees, well, those aren't the bees that we put out there. What we're looking at is we may have to change the plan because it's a real tight area over there, and the bees can swarm too close to, you know, because our area is real tight. So what we're going to do, we're probably going to move the beehive over here to my backyard and just be able to have that, make that product, that honey, that Moore's East Side honey. My backyard is, like, I don't have a backyard. It's all edible. So the bees
just
be a natural fit over here. And, you know, they pollinate the plants over there as well.
Yeah. I put a chair in your backyard and sit down. I'd be the healthiest man in the state. You got everything back there, boy. Good Lord. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, I done seen this stuff with my own eyes. But I did visit a brother up there in Louisiana, and he had his little plants over to one side of the yard. He had the bees, these beehives. He had about four beehives
over on the other side. And, you know, we just walk right straight through there, man. You know, the bees, they'll come out, they'll go there and pollinate the plant and go back over here, come and pull out the little thing and take it across the street. And he's got this machine where it spins real, real fast and it slings the honey out, and the honey goes down into this vat. And he captured the honey in the jars, and then he goes back and he takes those things and put them back in, and the bees start over. And so that's amazing. And I know y'all going to have it eventually have the same setup out there, but because good honey is expensive. And you're talking
indeed
about organic honey and organic bees too.
Yeah, you know, right now so, in the country, a lot of bees are dying because the pesticides that they're spraying on these plants. So they have to import a lot of these bees in from Europe. That's why we got to take some type of stakehold or invest in our own agriculture inside the country. You know, if you do it in your own spot and then you eventually spawn out to other areas in your city, man, you'll be doing not only the landscape a favor, but you'll be doing nature a favor, man. You're saving lives.
Okay. You're absolutely right about that. But I seen this little process, man. This guy, he had plum trees, he had greens, and I mean, he had these big Chinese plums, big yellow ones. And I got up under that tree, man, and I said, he told a lot of people don't know about them. I said, I ain't one of them. Give me a bag. I was eating plum left and right. And I had another little young guy with me. He said, you can eat these. I said, boy, where you been? You better get out of the city. But anyway, what I'm going to do is when our grapefruits come out, usually start coming out when we get in the winter after the first frost, because we got some good pink grapefruits. And, I mean, they'd be so big, so many of them, because we got two trees side by side. We didn't cut them back, so I don't know how what kind of harvest we're going to have this time. But usually... my brother, he's a farmer, and we have to get all of our friends, man. It'd be a whole yard full of us, man, and we'd have boxes and boxes and boxes of grapefruit. And they'd be sweet, and we got a muscadine vine. I got to go out there and put some posters around it and put some chain-link fence across the top and train it on up there because it's ready now. But trees back and get rid of all the squirrels and the birds because they eat more than we is.
Yeah, our grapes in the backyard didn't do nothing this season.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but our blueberries and other kind of berries, our little boys just eat them up. They did good. They do good every year.
Mm. Well, I had got myself growing some peppers. I got these peppers from this little Chinese lady, and she says these are not to be eaten. I said, well, they peppers, ain't it? She said, yes, but you better not eat them. I wish I would have listened to that lady, man. I grow them peppers, and I told the lady next door. She asked me, could she get some of these peppers, because I was growing them on my front porch to put in her greens. I said, no, don't mess with them peppers. And I went in the house. She stuck out there and got some of the peppers. I put them in them greens, and I knew she hadn't got them. I come back over there, I knocked on the door, and I knew the greens were ready. She comes to the door. I said, how you doing? She told me, I'm doing all right. So you ain't one of them peppers. She said, oh, my God, them things lethal. My brother-in-law, he growing some down there in Homestead, Florida, and right outside his window. And they little tiny green and red peppers. And I said, brother-in-law, can I have some of them? He said, yeah, because I was doing the cooking when I was down there.
Right.
And after I had to put the peppers in the food, my sister come in there. I said, well, you know, she asked me what I had in it, and I told her. And I said, I got some of John Peppers outside. He said, you put some of them things in there? I said, yeah. He said, he's tricking you. I said, well, what's wrong with him? She said, you can't eat them things. Them things so hot, it'll blow your head up.
Mm.
said, well, long white dude be like, he said, man, you had me for the trouble. I said, well, here, you eat some of this food over here. Brother, I don't want none. I said, boy, you terrible, man. But anyway, man, we are making a lot of progress in the economic side of this thing. The potential is super fantastic, in my opinion. And but what I want to also discuss is the credit union side of this thing, in the banking side.
Okay.
So how you give us some insight on that?
Well, we're doing the research right now, and you know, we want to make sure we got the right highly qualified people who can run and get us all the information. Right now, we're just in the gathering stage of getting information to move forward on creating credit unions in the areas where we have farms, where we have the real estate homes, the commercial properties. And this would be the serious landmark of a financial sector. And in those financial sectors, this is what you would have when you looked at the Black Wall Street, when they had the several grocery stores and banks, doctors, the whole thing, and that dollar rotated. And by creating this sector, not only will we create financial wealth that we don't have anymore, you know, the dollar gets to rotate. You know, when those dollars rotate in the area, that means that everybody's business is doing well, or the majority of the businesses are doing well, and it isn't leaving our area. And, you know, it's group economics. So with the credit union allow us to be able to build children's clinics, schools, you know, real state-of-the-art schools, and any other things that we want to get into in business-wise.
Well, I also want to ask you this right here now, because I've seen this guy do it, and I got to go back and look at it again. But producing our own fuel off of the fruits and vegetables, of, you know, petrol, for petroleum, I'm not sure if this guy was taking the oil, because he had a lot of restaurants coming to him, purchasing to his door, because his whole thing was in his yard. He made his own right there in his yard. But he was making his own fuel, and I want to know if you knew anything about how to go about doing that.
Not yet. I'm definitely not in that arena of being able to take the fruit and vegetables, turn them into fuel.
Well, he had it going on. I got to go back and see if I could find it again and see how he did that, because I know that you could take vegetable oil, use vegetable oil in some kind of way, process that stuff to make fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah,
we're
on
automobile, because this guy had trucks, and he was everything.
Mm-hmm.
He was totally self-sustaining. He had little goats and stuff around there, and the animals and stuff around there. He says, all of my animals are like pets. He says, we don't have a wild animals. And it was amazing how he had this thing going. The whole yard, basically. In a restaurant, coming down the shelf from the restaurant, steady knocking on his door, buying his. It was all organic, healthy. So there's a tremendous amount of income to be made from this. And not only that, you have an entire neighborhood that can be self-sustaining with this type of thing. So in my opinion, I think this is right now where we are in America with the current conditions that's going on. I think that investing in this should be the number one investment, because it's certainly an appreciable investment.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You got a lot of people, they buy, you know, get a job and they go out and they buy cars and stuff. But an automobile is a depreciable investment, because you had to take money out the house to make sure the gas in it, oil change, maintenance on it, tires on it, windshield wipers on it, oil change, and all this right here. So that's got to be a depreciable asset, because every time you get in, it goes away. If you're not coming back with money, then something ain't right.
So if we take a good closer look at the economic side of what we're doing, in not only the economic side, but every aspect at the agricultural side of this thing, we can find out that that is the answer to a whole lot of problems. We got, you know, we live under the threat of hospitals. We're under the threat of grocery stores, and but by taking responsibility for our own self and growing our own food, so we'll know what's in it and how it was processed, how it was grown, and you automatically contribute to your health, the strengthening of your immune system when arthritis and bursitis come around and go around you. And that's just the bottom line. So you there's no need to make a trip to the grocery store. There's no need to make a trip to the hospital because you're never sick. And I'm
that's right.
60 years old, but I don't have any brown pill bottles in my cabinet at 60. So I've been watching that for a long time. I get out there and when the harvest time comes, I had to go out there and pick fruits and stuff and vegetables and stuff over to my mom's house because she can't do it anymore. Well, she can do it, but she make us do it. Anyway, I'm going to get some of those grapefruits and some of that stuff from over there and bring it over there, and y'all can take those seeds there. And you have to let those seeds dry out, don't you?
Yeah, you can let them dry out, some of them, and then some of them you can go ahead and plant immediately.
Okay. Well, when we get some more, I'll bring some over there. I got to call and see what's out there. I know the muscadine grapes. I had to hurry up and get out there and get them quick. Cause them birds and squirrels, boy, they just took over, man. They get all of that stuff. But this winter, the grapefruits will be ready. And we got some
okay.
Some pears. Let's see, pears, plums, pecans, grapefruits. Oh, yeah, tangerines. Tangerine's real sweet. And she's got a garden
over
there. Yeah, so I'll bring some all of that over there. Matter of fact, we can probably go out there one day. I'll let you get back there with me and you can see it. And,
okay.
Perhaps because we always be need a hand to pick all them grapefruits, man, because, you know, one time we had the fire department with us. They come back and say, "Greg, day, man, good Lord." He said, "We might need to call another department to help us." It was about 12 of us back then, man. You know, I'm the one that had to get up in the tree because everybody else too big to get up there. And, you know, they'd be getting stuck, so I had to get up in there and get them out, bring all the stuff up top. And then some of them be so high, we just had to leave them, so we had to cut the top out of the trees. But anyway, we're rolling down to the next 14 minutes. What is the most important thing that you think that we need to deal with in this that people need to know about?
It's a good question. Well, I think having our contact information, yours, mine, Sundiata's, contact, just ask questions if you want to get involved, if you want to invest, if you want to, you know, bring a farm to your area, which is what we want people to do. This is a support system. This is about, you know, it's a collective effort. You will be an owner in that. You'll be a partner. We all will be partners. And remember, it's bigger than just the agriculture because we're moving into a whole, we're phasing into other parts around the farm area. Remember, what our main thing is we're taking control of it, all the major things that we need in life, food, clothing, and shelter. We're taking control of the main things we need in life, food, clothing, and shelter. And once we take control of that, we got power. When you take control of that, you are an owner. For those who like sovereignty, you will be sovereign. You write your own ticket. Your grandchildren will have wealth. They will have power because you have purchased, worked for some things, and it is inheritable. So for all those people who have wills and trusts set up, now you got something to put in there. You got some real estate, some property, some equity that the children can grow up and control, spend, invest in the way they choose to. That's about it, brother.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'm in absolute agreement. I was listening to this other young man. I played his plug yesterday on the show that I did day before yesterday. And he's up in New York City, and he said that if you want, you know, because a lot of times your children say, well, I don't like spinach. I don't like tomatoes. I don't want to eat onions. I don't want to, you know. He said your children will eat these things if you teach them how to grow these things. If you put them out there and let them participate in the actual process of growing these things, they'll eat them.
That's
and,
right.
That was amazing. I didn't think about that. I said, well, he's absolutely correct, because I remember when I was a kid, I called myself growing a garden in my backyard. I think I had about maybe 35 inches by 35. And I planted me some string beans. I planted some black-eyed peas. I had all kind of little stuff in that little patch back there. Had me some squash growing. And I said, well, I'm finna top this off because I'm finna put some watermelon back in. That was a mistake. And my mama used to go back there and say, well, what's all that at? You say, I said, oh, I put the watermelon. She said, baby, you can't plant the watermelon in there. They're going to choke out everything else. I said, well, I'm just going to let them choke out because I want the watermelon. And then I'll go regrow it later. And but then I did have me some watermelon. They started running all across the yard. My mama said, look, you got to, some of this got to go because you got watermelon everywhere. I can't even hang up my clothes. But it was amazing. That's when I was I learned that. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, brother, I'm going to go on and close down. And tomorrow night, I'll be over there with y'all. He said 8 p.m., right? On his broadcast. Tune the audio. So I'm going to dial into that broadcast tomorrow as soon as he sends me the information. And we'll be able to. Be able to get in there. You want to give us your contact information one more time?
Yeah, you can just contact me at summitofthemoors.com. Just send me an email. Address it to Dalo Sekou. Whatever it is, summitofthemoors.com.
Okay. And on Facebook, that's Urban Geoponics on Facebook, right? Or is it different?
That's right. Urban Geoponics, Geoponics.
Okay. All right. Well, brother, I'm going to go ahead and close out, and I'll see you on the call tomorrow. And I'm going to shut down because I got some guests got to come over here and pick up some stuff. And I certainly
right,
appreciate
brother.
You being on. All right.
Yes,
take care, man. Peace.
All right. Peace.
There's an old saying that you do not wait for war to make ammunition. Ammunition is to be made in peacetime. And the same thing is happening with those of you who have contracts with banks and mortgage companies on a mortgage. When everything is going fine and that money is going out, and you think because you have a good job, you might be making 15, 20 bucks an hour, and everything is fine, but what we have to understand is there is absolutely no security in a job. The only security that you have in a job is as long as you are able to perform. If you don't believe that, look at injured players of the NBA and the ABA and the NFL. What you have to do is engage yourself in the process of diversity. You have to diversify not only your income, but you have to diversify your situation. In the time of peace and the mortgage company is not foreclosing on you, maybe just sending you threatening letters, you're having some technical difficulties, now's the time to cancel the contract. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com.
Okay, Morris, I want to say for those of you who are tuning in late, we offer free articles, the 14th Amendment Exposed, Commerce Game, Secrets of America. The U.S. bankruptcy and the Moors
and other articles, just send me an email at tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll go ahead and get that to you. And we have gleaned an entirely a large amount of information here this evening in regards to the economic side and the beneficial side of growing our own food, because this, in my opinion, this is the only frontier left. I mean, this is it. I mean, if we're not doing this right here in the face of what we are seeing occurring inside the United States, we have a problem. It doesn't matter to me where you live. I lived in an apartment, and I had flower pots, and I had those things all up screwed into the ceiling outside, wrapping around the banister where I was growing plants. So I was growing enough plants. It was edible plants. It was just beautiful plants. But however, if they were edible plants, in my opinion, I would never had to buy any fruits and vegetables. I grew stuff. I grew enough for me and probably the whole building that I was in, right there in that one little spot. And so if you live in an apartment complex, you can grow, if you got a window ledge, you can grow you some food to eat yourself right there wherever you are. If you only got a small little pot, you can put some food down there, a small little plot. You can grow food in pots and put them on your porch. And so there is a way to survive inside the United States. We go ahead and put our mind to it. And all it takes is a little bit of time to learn how to grow these things and how to do the little soil and what have you. It's not complicated. It's just like anything else. And I did it as a child, so I know that you can do it. So when we go in the grocery store, if you just take a good look around at what they're offering you, that alone will tell you you should grow some food. Especially when you go in the fruits and vegetables section and you look at the labels and where this stuff is coming from, and we don't know what them people is putting on their food down in South America. We don't know we certainly don't know what China do over there with the stuff they're shipping over here. And we're steady consuming it, and we got all kind of malignancies and ailments and stuff, and we're steady doing the same thing. So it behooves us to try to do something different and change our lifestyle, and take control of the fruits and vegetables and foodstuffs that we put into our body to maintain optimum health. And we're going to have to survive an economic collapse inside the United States, the American dollar collapse. We need to have some kind of way to feed ourselves and our families. Otherwise, we are going to die. It's just that simple. There's no other way to put it. So for a lot of people. You know, because a lot of people are just, you know, everybody can't be saved. Some people just no matter what you say, they're not going to do anything. They're going to keep doing what they're doing all the way up until it begin to rain for 40 days and 40 nights. So and that's just the bottom line. That's just the way it is. So, but right now it's not raining, so we can go ahead and take advantage of some situations. We got the internet there. You can type information in on the internet and get all the information that you need right there on how to grow your own food. Go to YouTube and type in organic farming and organic vegetables, aqua and hydroponic systems, and watch and look at how this thing produces. And that's an industry in itself that you can have. You can have right there in your town, in your city, in your neighborhood, in your yard. You see. So and this is a new frontier. The market is available for you. You can make money. Grocery stores importing stuff from outside the United States. Now, here recently we have some grocery stores that are attempting to deal with the local community and going out and buying stuff from the local community, organic fruits and vegetables, and putting it on their shelves. Well, they can buy it from you. If you got a backyard that's not doing anything, you know, once a year you might have a cookout back there, have a few guests and have a party, but that's not providing any income-producing opportunities for you. So what you want to look at is the ground that everybody's standing on. That'll give you income for you all the way around. And it'll also help you with your survival and the survival of your family. So I just wanted to add that little bit of information. It's time for me to go, and I appreciate you all for tuning in. And we will be back later with another exciting broadcast. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, And you all have a good night, okay?